Hi, everyone, and welcome to today's episode of the Professional Book Nerds podcast presented by Overdrive. This is Jill. Today's episode is an interview I did with Pulitzer Prize winning author Elizabeth Strout. She is the writer behind Amy and Isabel, the Pulitzer Prize winning Olive Kittredge, My Name's Lucy Barton, Anything is Possible, Olive Again, and her new book, Oh William, which is picks up Lucy Barton's story once again. She won the 2018 Library Lion and has been an Oprah's Book Club pick. This was a delightful conversation. I had so much fun talking to her. We talked about, you know, the character of Lucy and what kind of keeps drawing her back. We talked about how she sort of, you know, takes her home state of Maine and turns it into a character all on its own in all of her books. And it was fun. I'm so excited for y'all to listen to it. If you want to get a hold of us, you can go to our website, professionalbooknerds.com. We are on Twitter, Instagram, and TikTok at ProBookNerds. And you can email us at professionalbooknerds@overdrive.com. I think that's all I got for you. So I hope you all enjoy this episode of the Professional Book Nerds podcast. Can you start by giving our listeners a brief introduction to O. William?
O. William is the story of Lucy Barton's former husband, her first husband, who she has remained on good terms with over many, many years. And he has a few bad things that happen to him. And as a result, she and William end up taking a drive through Maine to find something out about William's background. And I think that's sort of the story, except that it's not, because the story goes into their relationship and their current relationship and their daughters and their past relationship and stuff like that.
Yeah, I appreciate that this book, you know, looks at a divorced couple who is still on pretty good terms with each other. You know, they're still friendly.
Right.
They go on this trip. You know, it's interesting that he has... It's just a particular time in his life when he turns to his ex-wife and not his current wife.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Exactly.
What made you want to return to, you know, this the character of Lucy? She's appeared in two other books. What sort of made you want to come back to her?
Well, I really wasn't at all sure that I would. I thought she was probably done. But honestly, what happened, and this was... a couple of years ago, My Name is Lucy Barton was produced on Broadway and also in London, and Laura Linney acted in it as a one-woman show. And I was at a rehearsal with Laura Linney one day, and she took a step forward, and she murmured something about William. Mm. And she put her glasses up on top of her head, and at that moment, I thought, oh, William. And that's stayed in my head. And I thought, okay. He's going to have his story, because in My Name is Lucy Barton, she sort of sidesteps the marriage. She says, I'm not going to talk about my marriage very much, and she doesn't. But then I realized, wait a second, he's got his story. Of course, let's go find out his story. And parts of it were already in My Name is Lucy Barton. Like, we knew that he was the son of a POW from Germany who had come over to work in the potato fields during the war, which is true. There were POWs from Germany in Maine at that time. So we knew that, and we knew a couple of other things, and then I thought, oh, let's go. And then I realized it would have to be through Lucy's point of view, because she was such a part of it.
One thing this book explores is this idea that we can still be surprised by the information we learn about people in our life, in particular our family. Mm-hmm. And, you know, as we get older, in particular, you know, Lucy is in her 60s, William's in his 70s, I don't want to say, you know, you feel like you know everything you could possibly know about your
right.
family, and then that turns out to not be true at all.
I know.
Can you expand on that a little bit?
Well, I think that, you know, with the Ancestry, .com, all those different websites and things, I've heard a number of stories about people who have discovered things at different points in their life, but older people who have discovered things that have, like, really... kind of given them a shock. And so I thought, oh wait, this will be perfect for William to have a discovery like that. And then as it unfolds, we realize, you know, so much more about who his mother was and who she was with Lucy as well as with William.
Yeah.
You never stop being surprised. I think as long as you're taking a breath, you can always be surprised.
Yeah, there's always. Yeah, there's always something, you know, because I think it's sort of, and I say this, you know, my own relationship with my parents, like there's like this hubris of being like, well, my parents can't have any secrets. Like there's nothing that they could be like keeping from me. And then that's not always accurate.
Yeah. It's astonishing, isn't it? It's so interesting. I find this stuff just so interesting.
Yeah. The ancestry part is definitely, something that seems to be being explored in fiction more now that we have this technology,
right.
Because prior to this,
this is happening.
Yeah. Like prior to this, you know, William went 70 some years without knowing
exactly.
This.
Exactly. That's right. And, so as I've heard of these different stories in my own life, you know, being told to me by friends or friends of friends, then I realized, oh, wow. Okay. But that's a big thing to be surprised by. I think that they still are surprised by little things that they learn about each other on that trip as well. And, you know, back to talking about your parents thinking that they have no secrets. I think it's so interesting because there's always parts of people that they've never fully expressed to somebody, I think, for whatever reasons. And I just think that's so interesting as a fiction writer to try and go in there and uncover even just these small surprises, you know?
No, that's also very true. And especially for a couple who had been married. And again, that's
right.
That sort of like we lived together, we were married. What secrets could, like, what things
right.
have I not discovered about you?
Right. Right. And yet there's always more to learn about somebody if you keep your eyes open and your ears open.
Yeah. So you mentioned Maine, and of course that plays a big part in all of your books. Are you from Maine? Yes.
I am originally from Maine. Yes. My ancestors go way back to 1603. So I'm really from Maine.
you're like really from Maine. Yeah.
Oh, I'm so really from Maine. I kind of can't stand it. But anyway, that's my heritage.
No, no, I think
I lived in New York for 38 years. So that was fabulous. But I'm back in Maine now as a result of the pandemic.
Okay. Yeah. What is it about Maine then? Like, what drew you back? What makes you want to give so much life to it in your books?
You know, I honestly think, I just think it's my DNA. I think I know this place so well. And it really wasn't until I moved to New York City that I understood that Maine was going to be such an important part of my writing life. And it's because when I left Maine, I was able to see it, you know, in an entirely different way. And New York has so many different cultures and so many things happening. And it was just wonderfully freeing and fabulous to be there. But it made me look back and realize, oh, I think my story is going to be pretty much a Maine story because that's just who I am. And I know these people so well, you know.
That's it feels like your own experience with Maine feels sort of like what we've been talking about, where you think you know a place, and then there's some time apart. You know, I grew up in a small city in Northeast Ohio. I did not like it growing up. I got away as soon as I could, and then I came back to the area because once you're away, you sort of see those things you didn't see before.
Exactly. It's so interesting, isn't it? I know a number of people who have done that sort of thing, what you just described as well. It's just interesting, you know, that we're drawn back with new eyes. Yeah.
Yeah, and I think in your books, you sort of make Maine its own character in a way.
I know, I think so, too. I think it is. Maine is very multifaceted, actually. There are many parts of Maine, and the part that Lucy and William take in this trip is much further north than where I live, and my husband and I took that trip. We actually did the exact same route that William and Lucy did while I was taking notes furiously. Mm-hmm. And it was really very interesting to see how different parts of Maine are. And that was a very specific kind of area as well. So, you know, there's a lot up here, actually.
I love that you took the same trip that they did.
Yeah, we totally did. Oh, we had so much fun.
That, I mean, that's a good way to do some research and be
It was fabulous.
More authentic.
Yeah, it was like I kept thinking, okay, I'm Lucy. Look at Lucy. Look through
Right.
Lucy's eyes. She's never seen this. You know, now just do this through Lucy's eyes. And it was just so interesting.
So what was Lucy's perspective and how did it differ from yours in seeing this state that you've lived in for so long?
Well, I had actually been north, but not very much. I mean, my husband had been up there a lot because he used to be the Attorney General of Maine, so he knows every inch of this state, but he was more familiar with it than I was. And yet, just trying to see it through Lucy's eyes, I realized, okay, this is all, I'm looking at this freshly. And yet, at the same time, even Lucy acknowledges there's some little rumbling of familiarity that she feels because of her own background, you know, of isolation. It's like a little bit familiar to her, and she has different memories. You know, some of them are almost happy of driving with a father in a truck, and she's sort of surprised by that. So, you know, I just tried to take every emotion that she was having and drill down deep into it.
And now we're going to take a quick break for word from this week's sponsor. When is the perfect time to plant trees and shrubs? Big box store experts will tell you anytime or, great question, but the best time to plant is actually fall, which means now is the time to go to fastgrowingtrees.com. No more waiting in lines, messy cars, and digging through a lackluster selection. Just go to fastgrowingtrees.com and choose from thousands of varieties of trees, shrubs, and plants. Expertly curated to thrive in your area and delivered to your door in 1 or 2 days. Whether you're looking for shade, privacy, fruit trees, or just added color to your yard, every plant is shipped with a well-developed root system, ready to explode with new growth come spring. There's a better way to buy trees and shrubs and plants for your home and yard. FastGrowingTrees.com. Now through November 30th, go to fastgrowingtrees.com/PBN for 15% off. That's 15% off at fastgrowingtrees.com/PBN. fastgrowingtrees.com/PBN. You mentioned that just a little bit ago that you ended up back in Maine because of the pandemic. And I'm curious if the pandemic and moving back to Maine has, you know, changed your approach to writing in any way?
Well, that's a good question. And I feel on some level that it has, but I'm not able yet to articulate how it has. I mean, I was certainly working throughout the pandemic.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, but I'm always working, so that's not really different. But there is some sense of readjustment, you know, to realize that, I mean, because we lived in Maine part-time before, we'd spend our summers up here and, you know, come up for Christmas and stuff. But to have fully placed myself back into Maine is really only about 20 minutes from where I grew up, which is just very, it's still a tiny bit disorienting for me, I think. So I'm still trying to get myself aligned, you know, to my new reality.
That's fair.
Yeah.
What,
we all probably are.
I
in our own different ways.
Yes. I think, you know, it's even now, like a year and a half into this, it's still sort of having to make adjustments.
Yeah.
And
every day it's still, yeah.
It is. You know, there's part in your brain, you should be like, I feel like I should be accustomed to this, but you're not.
But
and
we're not, exactly. And we don't know when we will be, and we don't know what it'll look like when we, you know, we just don't know what it is. The future looks like in so many ways, I think. And that level of uncertainty that was through very much with us during the pandemic is still there. You know, it might not be quite as intense, but I think that's what I am feeling. It's like, What will the world look like? How will we all be in our offices or not again, you know?
Sure. Obviously, I'm not sure when you started writing O'William, but I'm curious if, you know, writing this particular book during the pandemic had sort of an effect on the story that you don't know necessarily would have been there in a non-pandemic time?
Yeah, I had just finished the book before the pandemic.
Okay.
Yeah.
So you missed
all
that.
And it was really, like, I thought, whoa, I better write an epilogue. But I actually sort of thought about starting an epilogue. And then I thought, no, because I really like the way O. William ends. And I thought, no, I want the reader to close the cover and have that in. No more Lucy Boyce after that. So.
Yeah. Yeah. That's something.
Just kidding, I didn't do an epilogue because it went on forever.
Well, yeah, that's something I've had conversations with other authors throughout the past, throughout the pandemic about deciding when or if to kind of introduce the pandemic into your books? And I think it's something that the literary world is sort of grappling with.
Yeah, exactly. It has to, right. And figure out how to do it.
Yeah, it's sort of like they're living, in sort of this like alternate timeline almost where these books are set in 2020 and 2021 and there's no pandemic. And
I know. It's so interesting because who knew, who knew?
Yes.
But now we know.
Now we know. There was like, no way
there
to.
Was just waiting.
I read on your website that you were a big library user when you were a child, and I'm curious what kind of books you were drawn to as a kid.
I would go to the bookstore and I would look under the classics section and I would write down different titles. And then I would go to the library and I would get those out. And I was, young when I did that. I mean, I was still, I was preteen and then teen. And then, so I was really reading on my own all sorts of classic books, the classics. And it was a wonderful, wonderful experience because there was something so private about it. I discovered all these people at such a young age and in such a private way that later on, in college or something, even in high school, if the book showed up in a class, it was okay because I already had my own relationship with it, So that was a really, really important thing for me to do. And then when I would be going through the library, I remember taking it as some, just different books. I mean, just different books that I wasn't even looking for and just taking them down. And there was always a sense like if the text, it sounds a little foolish, but honestly, it was almost like if the text sort of rose up off the page a little bit toward me in a way, then I would take the book. And obviously the text wasn't rising up off, but something in whatever I was glancing at, if it was catching me in a certain way, I would just take the book. And so I read many, many books that way, and it was really wonderful.
What kind of books do you read now?
I read contemporary fiction, and I read biographies. I keep going through stages of reading different biographies, and I'll read about the same. If there's somebody who's written different biographies, if there's a person like Tolstoy, I just read two different biographies of him over the pandemic because the one I read, I thought, oh, this is really interesting. Let me see if another biographer catches the same feeling. Because if you're writing a biography, you always bring something of yourself to it in a certain way. And I began to realize that. So I have, I'll do that kind of thing.
You have these two characters that you've written, Olive and Lucy, of course. And I'm wondering if, as you just said, biographers bring a little bit of themselves to the biographies that they're writing. Do you do that with either of those characters? Is there like a little bit of you in either of them?
I don't feel like I have much Olive in me, but I probably do because I feel like I know her so well that there must be stuff that I'm drawing up for myself, but she feels pretty external to me, although I feel like I really do know her quite well. Lucy is not me, but she's very accessible to me. She had an entirely different kind of background and everything else, but there's something about her that's sort of accessible. But all my characters, no matter who I'm writing about, whether it's a man or a woman, I mean, I have to start with something that I know myself to be true, and then push it and push it and push it to the furthest extent that I can.
I like that description of it, of just like starting with just a little nugget of authenticity.
Just a little tiny thing that I know that I have somehow learned through my life would be true.
Yeah. And just pushing it.
And then just really, really, it's almost like, I think of myself as having, this might sound disgusting, but I think of myself as having like a big wad of pink bubble gum. And that, you know, I just keep spreading it out on the table, spreading it and spreading it, and pushing it and pushing it and pushing it. So my life would be the wad of bubble gum. many different, very, very, very thin, far off shapes.
No, I like that. I like that. I can visualize that very easily. Just sort of like seeing how far. No, but just sort of tracing something to see how far it could go and what it would look like.
Right, and keep it true.
And keep it true, right? Which is probably why your characters always feel so authentic and like you could meet them on the street and they'd be real people.
Right. Well, I have spent my entire life trying to figure out what it feels like to be another person. Mm-hmm. I mean, that really has been the engine behind my writing. It's like, what does it feel like to be another person? Because I was pretty young when I realized, I'll never forget it. All of a sudden I realized, I'm never going to see the world except through my own two eyes. Mm-hmm. And after that, I realized nobody else is either. And that was like so upsetting to me because I wanted to know what it felt like to actually be inside somebody else's head. And as I was reading all those books, you know, at a young age, I realized this is one way that we can know, because those books will put us into somebody else's head. And so that really started my, you know, my ignition as a writer.
Yeah. It's sort of that moment where you're like, oh, I could do this too.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Since you did start writing so young, I'm just wondering kind of like, what were some of your early stories like and about?
Well, I was writing, you know, I remember I wrote some little story, you know, in fourth grade or something about somebody who ended up sitting on an egg. I can remember about that particular story, and she was like very upset, embarrassed, because she had sat on an egg with her dress on or something. Yeah. That's the only memory I can remember as a kid. But then as I got older, I was, when I was sort of young when we first moved to New York, and I would write stories about people in New York, and then I finally realized, I haven't lived here long enough to have absorbed the real genuine feeling of New York, and that's when I realized I had to, in my working life, go back to Maine. And then after a while, I was able to write about New York because I had lived there so long.
Okay. All right. Interesting. Yeah. Well, I have loved chatting with you. I do just have one more question, which is what do you hope readers take away from reading O. William?
You know, I hope that readers, What I envision, I would like them to feel, just even for a few moments, like the ceiling of their life had been lifted. Just so there's some sort of, you know, a little bit of a transcendent moment where they realize, it's all just life. That's all. This is all just life. And if they recognize themselves, that's wonderful. If they don't, that's fine. As long as, you know, I hope they can take into their heart both Lucy and William. But I'm always hoping that the reader has some sense of just saying, right, okay, thank you. Now I get it. It's just life, and it's okay.
That is a lovely answer. Thank you so much for coming on the podcast.
Oh, you're so welcome. Thank you for having me. I really appreciate it.
Readers can sample and borrow the titles mentioned in today's episode on Overdrive.com, and our library friends can purchase these titles in Marketplace. Professional Book Nerds is proud to be an Evergreen Podcast signature program. To learn about other Evergreen podcasts, visit evergreenpodcasts.com. Our podcast is produced, recorded, and edited by Jill Grudenwald and presented by Overdrive. To learn more, visit professionalbooknerds.com.
Hey there! Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower-than-low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.